And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's just about to turn 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 1st of August. How are you all keeping? I hope you're very well indeed. And stick with us for the next 3 hours. We'll keep you informed and entertained. We want you involved, of course, throughout the morning in the conversation. Raise your own topics or comment on what we've lined up for you. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000. You can send your voice notes to that number as well, of course. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25 000, 07491 25 000. Or if you prefer to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And don't forget, you can watch the show as well. We are live on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. And you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, or we're also on Facebook, Highland News and Sport. Sorry, or Highland Hub. Yeah, there's Highland Radio News and Sport, isn't it? Anyway, search Highland Radio. It'll pop up, don't you know? Right, on to the newspapers for this Thursday morning. The Draconnell Tribune membership rule must apply to all. That's according to the Fine Gael grassroots. Fine Gael in Donegal has confirmed that Monday week is the closing deadline for nominations to contest the general election. The convention is scheduled for the Radisson Blue Hotel Letterkenny on August 26th, amid speculation that Simon Harris may preside in an effort to jazz up the party's faithful and to create a new spirit of hope and eternal optimism. In the background, there is a strong traction from long-term grassroots members who want the Fine Gael National Executive to apply the two-year membership rule to all candidates seeking nominations. They believe their views are not being taken on board by party headquarters and in the debate about the selection of general election candidates. Grassroots members actually claim that the decision on candidate selection is already a done deal. So where's the point in having any membership structure, they say. Behind the scenes, the paper understands the convention is among the most crucial in the country's 43 constituencies, and it's marked in as a must win for the Taoiseach. This is a tough ask, given that at the recent local elections, Fine Gael first preferences fell by 5,200 to a new low of 11%. There you go. It's going to be interesting. That two-year rule, of course, would exclude a couple of people's names that have been very closely linked with that and, I suppose, open the door to others, such as John McNulty, who we had on this show, who said he would be deciding soon whether or not to throw his hat into the ring. The Donegal News this morning, the daughter of a Newtown Cunningham woman who died days after she was told no in-home weekend palliative care was available for her after being discharged from hospital, is calling for change. Having previously beat breast cancer, Bernadette Doran, 74, was given the devastating news in March that her cancer had returned and was aggressively spreading throughout her body. Mrs. Doran spent 1 week in Letterkenny University Hospital prior to her passing, but it was her wish to spend her final days at home. Sadly, she died at home on Sunday, March 24th. Her final visit from the community palliative care team in Donegal Hospice was 2 days earlier. Speaking to the Donegal News, Mrs. Doran's heartbroken daughter, Fiona, said despite her family's reservations about her mum's wishes, she said she and her family were reassured by staff at the hospital that in-home palliative care would be available and that her mum would be under the radar of Donegal Hospice. The Derry News this morning. Is Derry a dirty city? It's a question. Is it a dirty city? I don't know. More of you would know Derry City better than I. Is it dirty? Well, that's a question that's answered on page 5 or discussed on page 5. Concerns raised about cleanliness of Derry. I don't mean Derry an awful lot. It's never struck me as dirty, if you know what I mean. Do you know how sometimes you get an impression as soon as you walk into a place that it feels dirty? Dublin, and I'm sorry to say that to any Dublin listeners, that it kind of feels dirty from the get-go. Never really got that impression with that first impression with Derry. But what do you think? On to the Independent now, and coalition leaders are under pressure to announce the biggest single increase to the weekly pension in October's budget. Cross-party backbench TDs want Public Expenditure Minister Pascal Donoghue to add €20 a week to the payment in a bid to win over older voters before a general election. Last year, the pension was increased by €12. Earlier this year, while Michael McGrath was finance minister, he indicated that it would rise by at least the same amount this year again. Jack Chambers was appointed as the new finance minister in June. Backbenchers from the two main parties have urged senior figures to treat pensions separately from other welfare payments. They believe it is important to provide older people with further support ahead of the general election. Does anyone disagree with that? I'm not sure many would, or maybe they might. Fianna Fáil TD John McGuinness said he wants to see a €20 weekly increase. They have to acknowledge the cost of living and how people are under pressure, he said. There should be an increase on all social welfare benefits rather than maybe, you know, a universal payment to electricity companies, which effectively is just, why would they drop prices when they know the government's about to give them a load of taxpayers' money? Maybe instead of some of these universal initiatives, would you prefer to see a more targeted approach that so that those that genuinely need it receive it? I don't know. What do you think? It's an age-old question. A lot of you would be familiar with the old dodgy box TV service. Operators are being cracked down on it, would seem. One, a man convicted of laundering more than €900,000 arising from the operation of an illegal dodgy box television streaming subscription service has been sentenced to 1 year and 4 months in prison. Kieran Donovan of Kildare appeared before Judge Martina Baxter at Naas Criminal Circuit Court yesterday. He previously pleaded guilty to three charges of money laundering arising from his selling of subscriptions linked to the King Kong media streaming service between January 2016 and March 2022. So that's what, 6 years, 900 grand. He's taking in over 100,000 a year. With dodgy box subscriptions, and he was simply a reseller too. He would buy them, I presume, from King Kong Media and sell the slots then to the public. The judge handed down a sentence of 3 years and 4 months, but suspended the final 2 years. The court previously heard that thousands of users of the streaming service had access to copyrighted Sky Sports, BT Sports and other subscription television services. I understand the ramifications of this man's actions. I understand it's illegal. I understand he deserved to be punished, but I find it hard where to normal people, no harm is actually caused as such. And Sky could say it costs jobs and this, that and that receive quite stern custodial sentences. And yet fellas, mostly fellas, guilty of the most heinous of crimes, circulating, downloading, forwarding on images, walk away with suspended sentences. As I say, maybe I'm conflating two very different issues there, but the court seemed to be very serious on some things and then lackadaisical on others. There was an interesting survey. It's framed here. It's framed here differently than I would. It's in the Irish Daily Mail. Fears over alarming increase in conspiracy theorists. Now, they're calling anyone who answered a certain way to this survey a conspiracy theorist. I don't. I think people are justified in their cynicism, their scepticism, you know, reserving some judgment until they see how things play out. But anyway, a senior analyst has expressed deep concern at a shocking new poll, as I say, these are the paper's words, that has found one in five Irish people believe in conspiracy theories. But then again, you see, what this comes down to, and this is why I picked out those two words, is what is a conspiracy theory? The survey by election watchdog, the Electoral Commission, revealed a high prevalence of anti-immigration conspiracy theorist views among voters, including that the establishment was replacing Irish people with more obedient immigrants. And one expert has said that there's been an increase in support for conspiratorial views since the pandemic. So let's go to page four to see how easy it is to read. I've mixed the pages up, have I? Right, I actually have the graph on my phone. We're going to be talking about that a little later on, but I downloaded the graph and it just is more descriptive than reading through an article, especially when the article is very heavily opinionated in describing certain things as conspiracy theory when many might feel they are not. Let me just see if I can pop it up here. Right, okay, so the question was asked, the government keeps many important secrets from the public. So these are some of the conspiracy theories they're talking of. The government keeps many important secrets from the public. Do you believe that to be the case? Well, 21% of people believe that that's definitely true. 38% believe it's probably true. So the majority of the population, 59%, believe that the government keeps many secrets, many important secrets from the public. There are ongoing efforts to marginalise, control or destroy certain groups of people through the use of political policies. 31% believe yes, 44% believe no. A small secret group of people is responsible for making all major decisions in world politics. So this is the New World Order. It's called different things, okay? So that question was put to a lot of people. 30% of people believe that is possibly or is true. 50% believe not. Groups of scientists manipulate, fabricate or suppress evidence in order to deceive the public. That question was put to, I think it's 3,000 people. 28% believe that to be true. That's almost a third. 51% no. Experiments involving new drugs or technologies are routinely carried out in the public without their knowledge or consent. 22% of people believe that is true. 58% don't. Elected officials want more immigration to bring in obedient voters. 22% yes, 59% no. Viruses and or diseases have been deliberately spread to infect certain populations. So they asked 3,000 people this question. Viruses or diseases have been deliberately spread to infect certain populations. 1 in 5 people believe that to be true, 60% not. So that's just a clearer representation of the facts and figures there. The Farmers Journal, the dispute between merchants, co-ops, vets and the Department of Agriculture regarding the sale of veterinary medicines rages on this week. The row centres on who should be allowed to sell and supply vaccines and doses directly to farmers. The decision will have major economic consequences for whoever secures the rights to sell. One of the of a number of draft documents circulating this week would ban merchants and co-ops from selling vaccines to farmers. The Minister for Agriculture summoned all parties to a crunch meeting at Black Weston on Wednesday evening. Hugh Edwards, he was the face of anything that happened in Britain, anything that sort of ended up on BBC News, he was there. If it was a big story, he was wheeled out. He was the face of that organisation, and it's going to be problematic for future, not that this is the biggest deal of it, but, you know, for future use of archive footage, because he is in pretty much every major news story over the last 40-odd years. But he is potentially facing a prison sentence. His catastrophic fall from grace yesterday was complete, as he admitted making indecent images of children. The veteran newsreader was for decades the flawless face of the BBC across the water, who broke news of the British Queen's death and covered Prince Philip's funeral. But the glittering career is now over after the 62-year-old stood in a dock and quietly and calmly replied guilty to 3 charges of having indecent images of children on his phone. And Edwards is staring at a possible jail sentence, as he was told the offence had a starting point of 12 months in prison. He could also be put on the sex offenders register. Edwards was arrested on November 8th last year, which leaves the BBC facing questions about why it kept him on, especially as he was suspended over a separate complaint at the time. He was not charged until June 26th. And not only is he the third highest paid presenter during that period in the organisation, he actually received a £40,000 pay rise. And these images, it was another investigation into another paedophile, and they discovered his contact on their phone, I believe. So it was separate to the other stuff that was going on there. Childcare costs could soar by 40% next month with the providers leaving the scheme that's been that's seen fees frozen for the last 2 years, it's warned. This is the Mirror. However, Children's Minister Roderick O'Gorman refuted the suggestion, saying, despite previous threats, the numbers of providers has not fallen dramatically. Under the new core funding model, providers were given direct state funding if they agreed not to increase fees for the first 2 years. That's a complex area. We've discovered it. We've covered it quite a lot on this program. But I find it hard sort of to get, as I say, different childcare providers, the core funding, this, that and done. So we'll be doing it again, and I'll be strengthening my knowledge in that regard, hopefully through that. The Sun, finally, Conor McGregor, he was banned from driving for 2 years yesterday, but the UFC star now faces a €2,000 fine after he was driven away from court without wearing a seatbelt. He just loves controversy, doesn't he? The fighter, who recently starred in Roadhouse, which I only got about halfway through, narrowly avoided being jailed for an appalling series of dangerous driving incidents in Dublin. He jumped a red light, sped in and out of traffic, and almost caused a collision. The MMA star asked, "Are you taking the pee?" when a Garda who drove at 160 kilometres per hour to catch him asked him to step out of his Bentley Continental GT convertible on the evening of March 22, 2022. So he walks away. Terry joins me on the show now. Hi, Terry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Right, so you have been looking for accommodation recently, and what's been your experience?
Okay. Well, I've managed to find somewhere secure. We'll say secure in inverted commas because you just never know. Mm-hmm. But when was it? It was 2 years ago. We had been renting a house during lockdown. And well, the first house we rented during lockdown was put on the market 2 weeks after we went into the first lockdown. So we had that was difficult. Managed to find somewhere, very expensive. Landlord was not the most stable, I don't think. Anyway, we were pushed out of that place, wasn't given our deposit back, had to take her to court to get the money back, had to find the money to rent somewhere else where there was nowhere. Managed to find somewhere temporary for 6 months. Very kind lady, let us stay there. And then I managed to find somewhere that is seemingly long-term and seems to be quite peaceful at the moment. But you just can never relax because you just never know when the person is going to decide that they want to move back into the house or they want to put it on Airbnb.
There's no certainty for you. And I think it's a terrible way to live, especially when you've dependents, Terry.
Yes. And like I'm self-employed as well, and anybody out there who knows what it's like to be self-employed, that is uncertain by its nature. So I mean, it's very, very stressful, it's very difficult, and it's very expensive. And do you know that actually the biggest thing that people don't understand is that my children look to me for security and stability and guidance, and I'm in charge of leading them through life. Mm.
Yeah, and it's only not only about caring them and raising them and keeping them safe and happy, but also too, we all try, don't we? You sort of think of, is there anything I'll be able to help them with when I move on in their lives? Yeah. And for many people, that could be a property or whatever. Do you see home ownership in your future? Is that even possible, do you think?
It's something that I am hyper-focused on. But it's getting harder and harder. This whole subject is something that I feel very passionately about, and I learn as much as I can just to give clarity to it. And I've spoken to TDs about this, and they don't know as much as I know, which is crazy. Mm. And the council just impotent. 52% of new houses that were put up for sale this year in Ireland were bought by investment companies, not by people. Mm-hmm. Of 52% of them. So when we see in the news that there are all these new houses being built, they're not really benefiting the people who need them. The supply is overwhelmed by the demand, so that pushes the prices up. So there's a lot of people who would be trying to get on the ladder who can't afford it because there's bidding wars, and they're bidding against like multi-millionaires as well, which is obviously unfair. The derelict property grant, everybody was, thrilled about this. It's brilliant. We can all, we can buy an old house and do it up and we can get some help with that. But what's happened is it's pushed the prices up by 30 to 50%. So what was like an old derelict stone cottage that you could have got with a couple of acres of land for 50 grand is now going for 100.
Yeah, the
it's
value.
Just insane.
There's more value in it now, isn't there? Because they are actually development.
Yeah, but it's cancelled out the grant, essentially. The council mortgages, right now, Donegal County Council, and I don't care about calling people out because I'm annoyed, they've got the worst reputation for approving mortgage applications. And I've spoken to the Minister for Housing, various TDs on this, and the Dáil don't want to know. They have got the poorest rate for approving. They mess people about. They tell them to spend their savings to clear debt, and then they can't guarantee that there's a mortgage. Mm. There's the parameters for successfully getting a council mortgage are so slim, it's near on impossible to get. Like, you almost have to guess the magic number. So, I mean, that's no good. Banks, for people like me, being self-employed and the sole provider in my family. Like, it's insane. Like, as self-employed, I have to provide 2 years of bank statements. If I work for somebody else who's self-employed, I only have to provide 3 months, which is insane. Makes no sense. It's illogical. How can another self-employed person offer more security on my income than I can? They can't. It's just stupid. I also think the Airbnb situation, the tax that is charged on Airbnb is 13.5%. Private rental income is between 20 and 40%, depending on the incomes that are already coming into that household. Now, they've just brought out some new incentive. It's not an incentive, it's rubbish. There's like a €3,000 tax break. But just to give you the actual figures on this, what ends up in the person's pocket and why everyone's doing Airbnb and not private. If you have the house I live in, there's an identical one nearby, right? So these are real figures. The Airbnb charges over €1,000 a week, occupied for 6 months a year. That brings in, after tax, of 13.5%, an income for that person of €22,490 a year. My house, €700 a month. Landlord pays 20 to 40% tax on it, I don't know. €6,720 after tax. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no incentive for people to rent to private tenants.
So, but what are you comfortable with us, though, trying to not dictate, but tell people or try and encourage people what to do with their own private property, though? Like, are you comfortable if we want to go down that route? Because really, you know, the fundamental problem here probably is the government's not building enough houses, the councils aren't building enough houses, and then we turn to, and this is why maybe landlordship has become a dirty word, people won't admit to it anymore, is because people sort of look towards the private rental market rather than saying, well, why aren't we building more, you know, public homes?
Yeah, there should be more public homes, but then, you know, like, say for the likes of me, there were a couple of times where I was forced, because I had like 2 weeks to go on a lease. This happened a number of times in the last few years, and I hadn't secured accommodation. I had 2 weeks left and a house full of furniture and 2 children. Mm-hmm. So I, out of desperation, called the head of housing for Donegal County Council, very nice man, but had no solutions. I asked, with the influx of immigration, were there new resources? You would think there would be, but no. And I was told by Donegal County Council that even if my children and I were sleeping in the back of my car, we would not be considered homeless because I earn too much money. Mm. So, I mean, that's terrifying. That's terrifying. Like, if I didn't have children, I would have no problem pitching a tent in the Diamond in Donegal Town.
Yeah, I get you.
And calling the press. I would have no problem. I can't, because I have children, you know, and I wouldn't want to embarrass them.
But the only thing is everything.
I wouldn't qualify.
Everything is pointing really, arguably, to things getting worse, you know, because there's an awful lot of pressure on the rental market for different reasons. People are moving around the place, of course. People are coming of age where they need a property. There's lots of people entering accommodation, the likes of hotels and what have you. They are also competing for houses that are out there. And then also, as you say, people choosing to the short rent option over sort of long-term rents. And some of that is down to landlords feeling that it's too much hassle to be in the rental market. So,
no, it comes down to greed. All of this comes down to greed. And I'll tell you now, the government, where they can't mandate something, where they can't make it law, they incentivise.
But where do you see the greed? Where do you see the greed, Terry? Sorry, just so we're clear.
I mean, listen, I'm not saying that if I owned a couple of properties that I wouldn't do Airbnb. Mm. You know, it's you're always going to get this polarised view depending on your personal situation. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not saying that if I was a wealthy person and owned multiple properties that I wouldn't make, you know, hedonistically go after the maximum amount of profit. That's business. You know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's my issue, I think, lies with the government, the way that they've incentivized, or it's smoke and mirrors. It's empty gestures. It's impossible to achieve bursaries and grants, or near on impossible. you know, they've made it so difficult. They're not there. They need to appear to be helping people, but they're not, not really. Mm. A friend of mine actually has stage 3 Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he has been in the same situation as me for many years. And the only property he can rent as a single person is damp, dilapidated, things are broken. And periodically he has to move. So somebody, you know, immigrants can move in with a higher rent. And I don't want to be jumping on the race bandwagon.
Well, it's nothing
too
to
easy.
Do with race. It's no, it's I presume not. It doesn't matter what color someone is. You're just talking about people coming into Ireland.
No, yeah, and listen, I don't obviously I'm not from here. This place has been my home for 20 years, and I love the life that I can have here with my children. My children are Irish. So it's not about that. Again, it comes down to the government incentivizing landlords financially.
Caller says, just in relation to landlords, the 13.5% is VAT, not tax. The 13.5% VAT is paid before the 20% income tax. Just on those figures.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, the majority all still stands. So what do you believe? What would you like to see? I mean, there are those. I think Deputy Thomas Pringle has been amongst them that they would like to see people incentivized to long term rentals and taxed heavily for short time lets. Is that something you would endorse?
Yeah, absolutely. There's not one fix to this. It would be a holistic approach. Mm. I think the banks need to make some changes to their lending criteria. One of the main things, like I'm on a lot of these sort of pages on Facebook, you know, people trying to get mortgages and things. And across the country, it seems to be that I believe that we should be allowed to use our payment of rent as proof of capacity to repay a mortgage. 100%.
No, that's what one thing that really, really should happen. I'd agree 100% with you there. If you're able, and you mentioned, I think your rent at the moment is 7, but there's lots of people paying 12, 13, 1400 euro.
Yeah, of course.
And they can't qualify for a mortgage that would be 800 or 900 euro a month. That is... That should definitely be factored into your ability, especially for people who've done it for 2 or 3 years, consistently showing that they're paying.
20.
Of course, 20. Yeah. I know.
It's like I said, it's not there's not one solution to this. There's multiple problems that all need to be addressed. It would be great to see tax scrapped completely on private rent. I mean, they're not making that much. So, I mean, why not?
Yeah. I wonder, actually, ask people out there who are involved in Airbnb if tax was scrapped on private rentals, even for a period of time, would they be inclined to switch to that to that market? Terry, I hope you get. I know you're in. I think you might have framed it as semi-secure accommodation at the moment. I hope that turns into
secure
something.
For
that,
now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Secure for now. I mean, you can never fully relax. I won't be able to relax until I own.
You're at the will of the landlord, if the truth be told, no matter what the situation.
Exactly.
Okay. Terry, thanks very much for that.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Best wishes. No, it's our pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. So yesterday we were talking about the elements of the All-Ireland Transport Plan. We didn't know all the details. We sort of knew that there might be a wee connection into Letterkenny and what have you. We were also sort of speculating on timelines and what might get what first. Richard Logue is a project manager in transport in London, and he's accepted our invite to come back on today, so we can tease it out a little bit more. Right, Richard, good morning to you once again.
Morning, Greg.
Yeah, thank you so much for your
while
time.
While you were on the air yesterday, the report was actually released. And I mentioned earlier on I wanted to see an implementation plan, and we haven't got a proper implementation plan, but we've got an indicative timeline, which is slightly more vague, but it does give us an idea as to when this is going to happen. So it's confirmation that, yes, Letterkenny will have a railway coming back on these proposals. And bear in mind, these are still proposals. This is not government policy. It still needs to have feasibility studies set up, and it still needs to have formal government buy-in, although we do understand that the Irish government has gone to the European Investment Bank looking for funding to fund their side of the strategic rail review. So that's good news. Now, the not so good news is that clearly to get the rails back to Letterkenny, they're showing an indicative timeline of somewhere between 2040 and 2050.
Mm.
Now, this would be subject to a feasibility study. It would also be subject to a proper and full survey. So what the rail review is saying in the case of getting railway back to Donegal is that they need to, in the next couple of years, identify the actual route so the land can be safeguarded. So we will have a good idea within the next couple of years where that line is going to go. If I were a betting man, I'd say they probably won't have it very far from the proposed dual carriageway into Derry. But in terms of very specifics, like where will the railway enter into the city and into Derry, where will, you know, what bridges will be used? None of us know that answer yet, because that would be subject to a feasibility study.
So we're looking at the Letterkenny juts into in a perfect west to east line, which I'm sure is just for graphical purposes, into another route which sweeps from Derry, Oma, Dungannon, Portadown. This is pretty much what you were saying to us yesterday, that that would be your northwest link to Dublin, effectively.
Correct. And that would be the most viable way of getting a direct train. Now, we can get trains from Derry to Belfast and then change. At the moment, timetable doesn't really work, because as soon as your Derry train arrives into Belfast, the Enterprise is off 5 minutes earlier. So as a quick win, obviously, with the new Grand Central station due to open in the autumn, we'd hope that TransLink would timetable a better connection. It's still not the fastest route. If you're going to be really bald-headed about public transport down to Dublin, then I'm afraid the expressway is still, you know, the only key option, or maybe some of the local other bus services. But even so, getting stuff like that, like getting the timetable tied up together in the short term, will work.
Yeah.
I think what's likely to happen now is we should expect to see an announcement from the Irish government in the coming months about getting European Investment Bank funding for large chunks of this. We also know, because Northern and Western Regional Assembly have been championing getting the railway back to the northwest, that will make sure that it's hopefully at the top of the agenda. The big missing link, I think, for us, though, is still there is still no direct link between, say, Letterkenny and Sligo, which mm-hmm. would really start to give you a circular route all over the whole island of Ireland. And also, we know there's a lot of traffic that goes up between the northwest and down to Galway, for instance.
It's quite interesting, too, because as you mentioned, Ireland West, a.k.a. NOC yesterday, they very quickly released a press release stating that they would love to see... let me see what they actually called for. In response to the publication of the All-Ireland Railway Review report, the upgrading of the N17 to motorway status and the restoration of the currently disused Sligo-Galway Railway in order to provide modern and efficient connectivity to the airport is of critical importance. So they were quick off the mark in fairness to the team down there.
That's been a big ask of Ireland West Airport and also of the local politicians up and down the west coast as well. Now, the rail review isn't carved in stone. So, as I said earlier, it's not government policy. It's a guideline. But it also has said at the back end of the rail review that, you know, it's subject to a further update every 10 years. So it may well be that we could yet see a railway line running all the way down from Derry via Letterkenny into Donegal and down into Sligo and Galway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will happen eventually. I think the movement is there for it. Certainly, Western Track are lobbying very hard for it. Ireland West are lobbying hard for it, and as indeed are the Northern and Western Regional Assembly as well. And I know that Donegal County Council are quite keen on that as well. It's certainly written into the county development plan.
In terms of current plans, road plans, say the A5 or the link from Letterkenny to Strabane, do you think that these plans... Now, I know I've made this point before, and I'm not going to sort of go, you know, bang on that again, but do you think planners will look at the current plans for road development where there might be some overlap or benefit and maybe even refine plans? Or do you think the road infrastructure projects will go ahead and then we'll worry about the rail over the next, you know, 15, 20 years?
Well, if they have any sense, they'll do two together. I think we need both. We know that the A5... is long overdue for the Northwest. It's a critical piece of infrastructure for us linking Donegal down to Dublin. I mean, I don't think I can count the number of times I've been stuck behind either a tractor or a Sunday driver between Ballygawley and Oma. And you think to yourself, well, crikey, you need to have at least a proper dual carriageway at this stage. So I do see the two working together. Certainly the Irish government have made their commitments to paying for their share of the A5. I also think they should be looking to pay a share for the construction costs of the Portadown to Derry line, because ultimately that's where the trains from Donegal will run down to Dublin anyway. So I see that as very much complementary to the A5.
All right, so someone has worked on an awful lot of projects, and obviously you're sort of across the political scene and all of that, Richard. Just then, in a couple of sentences, how big a step forward in sort of rail connectivity to the Northwest and generally improving rail connectivity around the country do you think we are? We've got a document that sort of outlines what we would like. You've talked about we're maybe looking at sort of funding streams. There's rough guidelines in relation to that. How significant do you think this actually is? Or is this just another announcement of 15 billion euro for electricity car chargers that never transpires?
I think it is significant, but in order to make sure it's not shelfware, and God knows how many reports we've had over the years which just end up in shelves, we need to keep the pressure on the politicians to ensure that the funding and a funded implementation plan is in place. Without that, we can't, put it this way, we can't continue as we are. Everyone knows how dreadful the traffic is around Letterkenny, and anything that can be done to alleviate some of that, and that's why we also need to spend the money on roads as well. We just got to keep the pressure on the politicians to make sure this is delivered.
Yep, Dr. Joe Kelly's with us as well. Reading between the lines here, effectively, Joe, you're saying this ain't going to happen.
Look, you have to be realistic. This is a work of fiction, as far as I'm concerned, and it's not just my words when I use the word fiction. It's actually in the report itself. If you look at page 48, and it says it all. Please note, this is an indicative artistic interpretation of the recommendations presented within the document. And it goes on to say it's conceptual in nature and should not be interpreted as precise. So something that's conceptual is more or less an aspiration in somebody's mind. And if you delve into the actual report, it even hides the fact, for example, that Donegal, now think of this, there's 37 billion. It actually, the inflation in 2 years on this project, according to this own report, is 5 billion. It goes from 32 billion to 37 billion in 2 years. The report was done in 2021. But if you go down to Section D, the last appendix where it's headed, and look at it, you'll see that Donegal is being given 200 to 300 million out of a 37,000 million budget. Put that in context, it's less than 1.23% of the whole rail budget for the nation. Or another way of saying is almost 99% of this 37 billion that they estimated will be cost will be spent outside Donegal.
Joe. Inviting you onto this programme at one point was conceptual, yet here you are. It can come to pass.
It can come to pass if the political will is there. But let's be realistic here. If you even go into it, I mean, I think it's even captured in the whole thing again. There's an election coming up, Tatéine Ar Mhála. And as far as I'm concerned, this is more of it. We were promised an airport during the elections. There was three elections in the 1980s, early 1980s, 80, 81. And we were promised an airport in Letterkenny. Where is it? We were promised gas in 2002. There was an election on the way in 2002. I have a letter that was sent to Mary Hanafin, the minister at the time, not Mary Hanafin, Mary O'Rourke at the time, where Europe actually was given 11 million, 10 or 11 million to Donegal for a gas corridor to come in from Derry to Donegal and to Letterkenny. It didn't happen.
I get you, Joe, and I understand that. But any commitment or any promise or any report is never going to be more than 5 years away from an election either, is it? I mean, there comes a point where we have to sort of say, maybe this is the promise that gets delivered.
Well, listen, page 20 of this report. ultimately be for the Irish government and the Northern Ireland Executive to consider which of the recommendations described in this report should be taken forward for further developments. So I ask you in Highland Radio and your listeners, hands up, who believes Donegal is going to be first in the queue when it comes to that decision? In my area, in Glenty, there was protest last Thursday night, and I know Councillor Micheál Coleman and the other local councillors here, Councillor McGee and Councillor McClafferty, have been, you know, talking about this. There were six county council houses built in my electoral area from Glenty's right round to Cleasla in the last 5 years. And here we're talking about a 37 billion budget when we can't get the bread and butter issues that we need in our county sorted. We can't get our road infrastructure sorted. We can't get our housing sorted. We can't get our hospital sorted. And we're talking, as far as I'm concerned, a work of fiction. Hey, I'm all for rail and for the infrastructure. Let's do something simple. Put rail from Derry, or a light tram has been reported before, from Derry into Buncrana. And let's start with the small bits and build gradually. But this is ridiculous. And look, beyond it, which, as I said it to you, 37,000 million, and Donegal's getting 200 to 300 million of that. Less, just right. Slightly.
But listen, I mean,
and the reason why it's only 200 to 300 million is all they're actually proposing is an unelectrified single line track, which is going to be constrained by the amount of, you know, trains that can occupy a track at a time. And I share your cynicism, Joe. Well, we've been down this road a lot with reports. And the only way that we can turn these reports into action is for the politicians to stand up and say, yes, we've commissioned this report, and here is now our commitment, and this is our committed budget and our committed implementation plan. And until the politicians say that, I'm 100% with you, Joe, about the cynicism side of it. I think it opens up the debate, and it certainly puts it on the agenda, but this is basically taking you to the sweet shop and say, if you're a very good boy, you might get a Mars bar, but only if you're good.
But there does come a point, like, Joe, I am as cynical as they come, and I get exactly where you're coming from, and I probably would have said this myself if you hadn't have said it, but we can't sort of say nothing's ever going to happen because of our complete, because of, not mine, but, you know, frustration with previous promises that weren't delivered. We have to, do we not as a role, do we not as the public have a role to sort of stand up now and say, you've done this, this is the reasons we're going to be elected. Get this done. Get this over the line. You know, we have, I think sometimes we put everything on the politicians. We elect these people. We can de-elect them or deselect them. It's time for us to sort of, and we've seen brilliant groups of people getting together and getting stuff done. I think we need a bit of responsibility ourselves amongst the electorate and say, you've made these commitments and promises, follow through or you're out.
Well, look, and again, I don't want to be political, you know, party-wide, but for the first time ever since the history of the MEPs, the border region has no MEP. So there's no MEP along all the border counties right into Donegal. All the MEPs are further into the Midlands. So, and in one way, Donegal, Cavan, Monaghan have to take some responsibility. We do not have a voice in Europe as we sit, and will not now for 5 more years. Neither do we have a voice in the government. And that's the way it has been since the foundation of the state. And you're 100% correct. We need to take responsibility for that, because it was we, the people, that made the decision. And these are the realities we have to deal with.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that if the government and the policymakers, the officials in our government that run our government, as well as the politicians, could dig a trench from Clonas round to Claremorris and have us drift off into the Atlantic, and the further we'd go away, the happier they would be. If you look at the maps, and I've shared them there with your researcher, Caroline, look at the maps, and there's nothing in this budget for the whole area around Donegal, Sligo, Cavan, Monaghan, Roscommon, Leitrim. So there's a whole pocket. And you know something? I think the Donegal County Council, the new County Council, should call an emergency meeting, number one, go through this report, number two, and see how much of Donegal has been neglected by it. Then all the other border counties and all the counties of the west of Ireland, the one-third of the landmass of Ireland, meet and demand that the government give us not crumbs, but the billions that we deserve, for gas, for rail, for the other roads, the things that we deserve. And that's, nothing's going to happen until such time as one-third of the landmass of Ireland, the county councils of the West and Midland regions, stand together and say, enough.
All right, that's more the more broader political picture. But Richard, I'm not convinced there's actually a ton of votes in this, to be honest with you, because especially if you look at recent surveys, I think that I don't think the public can be swayed by promises, really. I think maybe, you know, cash in the pocket, perhaps.
Well, there's no votes in this as it stands, yeah. Because until, as I keep saying, there's a firm implementation plan and a firm financial commitment from the government to invest, then this will be aspirational. And I would share Joe's views about this, because you know we absolutely need to have meat put on the table and not promises. I think any government that does say we're 100% committed to this, we are absolutely going to deliver this, here's when we're going to deliver it, here's our budget set aside to deliver it, that's when the big boys put their trousers on. Mm-hmm. And until then, it's great. I welcome it. I think it gets the debate going. But we need to see commitments.
I think we're all in agreement on that. And this is apolitical at the end of the day. And Joe, you quite rightly pulled out some important wiggle room language there. And even yesterday, Richard, we were talking about this. When I think you said actually yesterday, when can I expect to get on a train? And that's absent, Joe. And I think in the absence of that, people are going to be potentially rightly cynical.
Well, again, if you look at the report, and the top priority for building this 37 million rail work is emissions. That's the top word, emissions, that they reduce emissions. So our government is more interested in emissions and immigration than in the people of this country, and in particular the people of this county.
Yeah, but if you get the policies right, everyone benefits, Joe.
Here's the policy coming from this report. This review does not recommend constructing new railways through the northwest coastal region, partly because of concern about the impact on the environment, as well as the value for money considerations. So in other words, Donegal and the west of Ireland, you know what? You aren't getting anything. And there it is for you, because it's not
environmental. Another indication that really we're just going to be the biggest national park in Europe eventually, outside of Dublin. OK, Joe, listen, thanks for your time as always. It's always a pleasure. I wish we had more. Richard Logue, appreciate it. You'll be getting a co-presenter title if you come back on tomorrow. But
well,
thanks.
Caroline knows where to find me, so you never know.
Take care of yourself. Thanks, Richard. You're great, as always. I do appreciate it. Greg, I don't know why anyone's telling me this. Greg, this day 5 months is New Year's Day. Please, I'm still hoping for a little bit of summer in August and September. But I suppose we should get the plans in place. It's not long away, is it? Can you make motorists aware that there will be a youth cycling competition on around Burnfoot on Sunday the 4th of August and Calais on the 5th of August? There'll be up to 100 young cyclists from around the country participating. Traffic may be slightly diverted at the slab road at the Round Chapel to go down to the roundabout at Bridge End. They'll may be asked to stop to let the race through. Motorists are asked to be patient as we try and run a safe event for their children. So just keep an eye on that. You know the area, don't you? That is coming up this weekend. Donegal County Council's development plan is in direct contradiction of what they are doing, and they don't even accept or acknowledge it. I think the council executive and councillors forgot the public can read, says that listener. I'm not quite sure what that's in relation to. I have a suspicion, but we'll come back to that after 10. All right, we do have loads coming up on the show over the next couple of hours. Please stay right where you are. But now we take a brief break for the news and obituary notices.